this is that stage where we're going to open it up and open up in terms of comments. I'm going to ask Stephen Kaler to come forward. He's been floating to the different rooms. This baby is out of swaddling clothes now. Along the way, there will be reality checks, but just your observations as you've moved around, and then we're going to open it up.
Yeah, thanks, Stephen. I just had a few comments that I've assembled as I've listened yesterday and also to today's sessions, and it's just been a great day and a half for me to listen and to meet all of you. A couple of sort of take-home lessons for me, I think. Number one, the real importance of increasing the number of minority investigators. The NIH has done a lot for many years, but we need to do more. And the whole issue of sort of looking at the earliest time frame for recruiting minority investigators has sort of hit home with me. Perhaps it's not early enough to look at high school or at college or at medical students. We need to sort of be sure that the funnel for access to research careers for minorities is open, and perhaps that requires earlier intervention. So that's one lesson that I've learned. The other one, which is new to me, was the literacy issues. I was very struck yesterday by the comments of the two people who dealt with this about the importance in eliminating health disparities of literacy, and I was shocked, really, that I think on the order of 14% of adults in this nation have marginal literacy skills, and I think the stories that we heard yesterday were quite compelling. Thirdly, the importance of eco-social theory as an innovative way to examine and perhaps address health disparities. That's certainly an important lesson for me. And finally, the importance of community involvement, as exemplified by the wonderful event last night and also by the discussions here in the breakout session and community involvement this morning. So the NIH, its mission, of course, is primarily in biomedical research, and its unique strengths are in biomedical research and in biomedical research training. We do have these new initiatives that are going to focus in the next 5 years in a concentrated fashion to enhance basic research on health disparities, on research infrastructure that impacts health disparities, and on community involvement, public information programs to help battle these issues. The new center, as I mentioned yesterday, will be doing some fast-track items, specifically loan repayment programs, endowment programs, and also the Centers of Excellence in Health Disparities. And I think it's perhaps through the new center that some of the innovative ways of examining health disparities problems and research into those can be best addressed and perhaps best funded, since they do have independent funding mechanisms. Not to say that all of the 25 institutes and centers at NIH who fund research will not also have interest in health disparities, but I think having a center is going to really make it, whose primary focus is health disparities, is going to enhance those efforts all the more. And finally, I think the need to perhaps have even a broader federal effort on health disparities to involve the Department of Education, for instance, the Department of Labor, the Department of Housing and Urban Development, perhaps that is an important recognition to have as we look at combating the global problem, the very bulky problem of health disparities with all of its ramifications. So, and finally, I think in addition to NIH, there are other resources that we can all look to. And I think within the Congress, for instance, there's a major lobbying effort going on to enhance funding for research that deals with prevention. And I think that's sort of next on the agenda for many of the people, lobbyists who are involved in medical research. Research America, for instance, is an organization that has a very strong interest in supporting prevention research, and they're interested in developing and perhaps even doubling a budget for prevention research through the Congress. And there's talk that the CDC's budget, for instance, may be doubled. I think that's something to keep in mind. And the CDC, of course, as an agency, in many ways, has a role equal and perhaps larger than the NIH can have in terms of direct community impact on health disparities. So that's an agency that you should continue to work with closely, as I know many of you do. And, of course, the private foundations such as Robert Wood Johnson and the Kaiser Family Foundation, those are also institutions that have major interest in the health disparities. So those are my thoughts and comments. And once again, thanks to Stephen and to everyone here at the University of Pittsburgh. I sort of hate to leave Pittsburgh, but thank you.
I do believe we have a friend inside in the form of Dr. Kaler. And the last comment around prevention, I think, is extremely important. We did make the Pittsburgh Tribune Review inside front page, bottom cover. The headline is treatment, that's like a prescription drug, RX, treatment sought for minority health care ills. And I gave you the headline from the black paper that said medical experts convene. And so the point here is that unless we break out of this biomedical model beyond the hospital, beyond, we're getting people out of the river at the end, we'll, I think, make a strategic error. The fact that NIH is now seriously looking at prevention research, prevention science, is an opportunity for us to come out of this summit with some emphasis on the importance of prevention and early intervention, and translating what the biomedical scientists have published and produced into interventions that can actually make a difference. So now the floor is open. And start with Dr. Bernard, please. And you're going to have to be as loud as you can, and we'll try our best to pick it up.
Is one of the big three areas of the strategic plan. It doesn't relate directly to the new center, but it's with the Trans-NIH strategic plan. And I think much of what you alluded to in the early part of your comment was, is covered and is intended to be covered, the sort of cross-fertilization of ideas, the sort of two-way street connection that this meeting represents in terms of helping to formulate the agenda. And, of course, the whole process of constructing the strategic plan, the five-year plan, has heavily involved outside groups and advocacy organizations, and it continues. And, of course, as we've said, and I think will happen, There's lots of time still for public comment on that plan. And many of you, I think, probably already have submitted comments to it. In terms of, you know, actually getting having the NIH sort of micromanage research proposals coming in terms of, you know, the degree to which specific communities are involved, I think that that could be problematic. Yeah. Yeah. Right. Sure. Yeah. Right. That's a probably, you know, we're not direct. I'm not personally involved in sort of the process of issuing RFAs and grants and those sorts of things. But yeah, I think in terms of having that in the spirit of an RFA could certainly be yes.
We're going to go to Ken Thompson was next. But if the viewpoint and the view are on this topic, we continue the theme. If yours, Ken, are you also on this?
Mine is off this topic.
Okay. Okay.
Mine is very simple and it follows Dave's point, which is it would be relatively. Yeah. We've been sitting around. We've known about this data for a very long time. It's time to act. We do know some things. Of course, there's more we can learn. We do know some things. And it is time to start implementing what we know, see how it impacts, and see what we do to improve it. And I don't think we've got time to waste.
This very... Okay. To which you actually do that. So we've made a commitment from our team here to put staff behind making that happen as one of the first steps coming out of this meeting. Yes, and then Jerry. Those of you who are still here in Pittsburgh, please, you can help us in terms of how we directed the Dart Inspector and others. We have the state here in the room. Yes. Jerry? Jerry, one of the presenters describing at their own institution that the gold standard had been laid down before them, and the gold standard was randomized clinical controlled trials. For those of us at the university, that's the weight being placed around our necks. For institutions like NIH, I don't know what the case is to, move them from, their perception that it's at the bench laboratory under the microscope, true biomedical bench research that they're doing, to what you're describing. You're standing next to a funder, a foundation, and somewhere the foundations may serve as a bridge. But we have to hear what language we put this in so that we can be responsive. Those of you who have attempted to write these kind of proposals, you need to tell us what you've encountered. We heard the Fully Loved describe last night a very innovative project that they're doing. It came from a foundation support. I don't know if any feds were involved or if you tried to submit to the feds and what the pink sheets look like. But at some point we have to say, what are we going to do regardless of what the government does? What are we going to do regardless of the government money? What are we going to do with what we have in hand right now and do it? I saw some hands. Yes, sir. Individuals who voluntarily came up because of their Okay, Cheryl Boyce, Ohio. Said to me was, we went to Washington to talk to the people in the office, and increasingly we have to figure out ways of going to Washington and talking to people in the office. Ohio has a commission on minority health. Where's my Pennsylvania colleague? I mean, we need to hear it from the state of Pennsylvania, from those of us in the state. Do we need a visible place in Harrisburg or wherever where there's an office of minority health to provide leadership at the state level? We have a minister in the back room. We have Mr. Birdsong, who works at the grassroots. You cannot just sit here and listen to people talk about community collaboration, what we want to do, and you're in the community. When's the last time you got called to be part of setting a research agenda? But before any of you slip out, we have to hear from you who are on the front line in the community. Did you hear us talking about community participation? What's up? Mr. Birdsong?
Yeah. I should say, the interaction and the form that we have. I think that...
Speak here, since you're standing. Go ahead.
I think that is real clear what's being said at this year's summit today. To me, anyway. The sentiment here is that most of us represent the community. We're not isolated from the community. We're part of the community. We have brothers, we have sisters, we have aunts, we have uncles, we have children that have died from the violence, we have grandparents that have died from prostate cancer, we got people that have diabetes. So we're not separate from the community, we're part of the community. Yesterday when I was part of the panel, the theme was infrastructure. Their approach to infrastructure was healthcare infrastructure. The infrastructure I was talking about was community infrastructure. So sometimes it's the language and then the culture that is the barriers. What I'm suggesting that most of us know that there have always been cultural protective factors, that no matter what the environmental conditions was, family, extended family came together and talked about what was the values, what was the prevention, interventions that was going to carry on within the family. Let's be real clear about this here. We have people that's in political office today. We have think tanks today that determine and fund various type of research initiatives, not necessarily for the best interest of the community all the time. A lot of initiatives is to perpetuate conditions. Case in point, let me give you a real quick example. We have 2 million people that's incarcerated in this country today. We have 5 million people in this country that have some type of relationship with the judicial system. Now, how is it that 10 years ago that one of the highest growing industry in this country was the penal institution? Who knew that there was going to be 2 million and 5 million people that was involved in that system? And why is the penal institutions in distressed white rural areas to help white workers that have lost their jobs because of the economy get jobs due to the industrial, institution of the penal institution? Why is that? So when we talk about disparity, we have to look at the root causes of it. This is not going to change overnight. I'm from a grassroots organization. We was like undermined, blackballed, because we talked about the politics of why, about racism, about institutional exclusion. No one opened their arms and said, come on in, we're going to give you some money. We had to be creative. Y'all know what the chicken and chitlin circuit is. We had to go out there and sell pies, chickens, and everything else we had to do to develop intervention prevention for our children. We have to be real clear that we have to become self-sufficient. We got to start practicing self-determination. We have to look at the natural resources that's in our communities. Now, that's not to say to let people off the hook, because we pay our tax dollars too. But can we wait for our children to die in the streets? Can we wait for our folks to die from cancer? Can we wait for our folks to die prematurely from diabetes and all the other diseases that's going on in our community? These forms are nice, but let's be real clear. We have to begin to become creative how we can generate resources ourselves. And we can match the resources that institutions are giving us. Let's create a community research. We don't have to wait for anyone to tell us to create a community resource institution. We can do it ourselves. We have barriers right in our community. We need to have meetings ourselves separate. Just like Malcolm says, sometimes family have to get together, shut the doors, and talk about what our barriers are. So we might have to have a separate discussion to talk about what we need to do as a community. Then once we come up with that agenda, we might need to talk with other folks and say, okay, this is our agenda. We continue to let other people determine and define what our agenda is, because we don't have none. So, of course, people are going to come and say, okay, we're going to study the sprucklehead woodchuck. Okay, we just studied him. We're going somewhere else. Now we're going to study the owl. We're going to study the dolphin. And we're running after the money. We ain't finished studying the dolphin yet. We're going over to the owls. So what I'm saying is there are always going to be health disparities as long as someone else funds the initiative. So what I'm saying is that a lot of these initiatives are special interest groups. Let's be real clear that. It's about making money. So can you imagine if we cure a certain disparity, certain people won't make money? Do y'all know they have products now that cars can flow without gas, but you don't hear nothing about it, do you? Do you know how the pharmaceutical companies fund all type of research initiatives so they can make sure that they have their drugs available for certain cures that might not cure anything? Come on, let's be real clear where we are going into the 21st century. We have to generate resources ourselves. That means you have to go to the private sector. That means you got to come out of your pocket when you get paid to throw $10 on the table. That means that you got to sit down with the foundation and give some money sometime. We have resources ourselves that we don't even tap. You go to a church every Sunday and see who's in the church. You have carpenters in the church. You have people who can build houses. You have doctors, lawyers. We have to come together, tap our own natural resources. Then when we go to a table, we go to the table with strength. This is about power. Let's be clear this here. This is about what you bring to the table. If you keep whining and crying and don't have nothing to, and I'm sorry I'm being raw today, but I'm just saying that we're going to the 21st century here. And there's a lot of things that we did the last century that we can't take to the new century. I'm saying we have to do a lot of self-inventory about who we are and how we define ourselves. Then once we get clear on that there, then we can go to the funders. Then we can go to major institutions and say, this is how I want my community to look. If we don't know how we want our community to look, how can we depend on somebody else telling us how it should look? Let's be real clear. Let's get the picture ourselves. For instance, the group that I deal with, I've been over 75 funerals 75 funerals brought at least 100 to 200 mothers, grandmothers, and little sisters that was grieving what their loved ones that had died. Do you think I waited for someone to come from a traditional Eurocentric institution to counsel people in our community? No. I went out and solicited people to come. We have black psychologists. We have black psychiatrists. We have behavioral therapists. They came on board because they wanted to make a contribution to their community. It ain't always about money here. Let's be real clear that. It's about people's committed. People committed to the mission. Then once you committed, then you'll find out that folks will come to you and they will give you the funds. But they want to see a product. So in leaving you, I'm going to suggest, and I appreciate we being here today doing this here, but I'm going to suggest that we come up with a model ourselves that worked for us. Let's don't be looking for none of the research models right now. Let's create a model. Because guess what? Our conditions is brand new. These conditions is brand new. So if these conditions is brand new, how can we depend on old ways of going about, you know, solving problems? We have a new problem. So until we come up with new ideas, new interventions, new prevention, then no one's going to know how to solve this here piece. So I'm leaving you. I'm going to say that I hope that Dr. Thomas, we can continue these type of community discussions. The community need to come together, come up with a comprehensive urban community plan dealing with health disparities. Then once we come up with that plan, then we can go to institutions such as the gentleman represent and Dr. Thomas say, Dr. Thomas, we're ready to work with you. We need some matching dollars, some matching resources, though. Thank you.
Now, that's what it's all about. And if you can't handle that, get out the kitchen. And unfortunately, sometimes the agencies like NIH and others wait until the boils up in the community and we're banging on the doors and calling names, and then they finally respond. So we're going to do our best to keep the summit together, to keep the summit as a ongoing community, ongoing dialogue. We're going to use all the technology we can, and we hope that we are in a new age and we can keep this going. I see all of you who have come from across the country as the early adopters as we try to diffuse the innovation of bringing people together across the different disciplines. So we're all, you're all here as volunteers. You came here on your own accord. No one had their boss tell them you got to go to this meeting. So we're going to try to keep this together, and I'm committing resources from our own center to make that possible. We're going to get you out of here on time, but I do want you to know that if you thought that this meeting went smooth, if you thought that you spent your time wisely, if you thought that you came here and you actually learned something, will you put your hands together, please? And now I just want to share with you some of the people that really, really made that happen. Please, Angela and Arlene and Andre, come up here. And my man over here. Here's our grad student. He's going to be our health communicator. Darla. Stand up, Darla, from the Maurice Falk Medical Fund. Siobhan, our other student who's here. There she is. Give her a hand. Trying to get her doctorate. And there's Natasha standing at the door being shy. I call on them because they're going to have to work up all these notes here, including Mo Coleman's, Mort's, and we will get that out to you. Now, there are just a few logistical issues, and Angela, please come up. Logistics. Okay, and you have some parking tokens. Okay, and Arlene, any business matters? Okay, your van is here. And please, Phil, come up and send us home. Okay, just have your attention just for a moment here. I'm going to let Phil Helen have the last word. Phil?
Yeah, the last word comes from the Birmingham jail. I think it's appropriate as we leave and go back to where we came from that we do that on the weekend of the very holiday, honoring the person that, in a sense, started all of this. So, from the Birmingham jail, This is a time of crisis, but also a time of opportunity and rebirth. The promised land is very far away, but there is a pathway. This pathway travels along the global contours of inequality and discrimination and requires of those who follow it an unbending commitment to the most perplexing issues of a changing world. But for those who do undertake the journey, the truth will slowly but surely be revealed. The moral arc of history is long, but it bends towards justice.